कुंज बिहारी गौरवंदे हरि कंतराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय धर्मम् एकेयशश्चान्ये कामं सत्यं दमं शमं अन्ये वदन्ति स्वार्थं वा ऐश्वर्यं त्यागभोजनं केचिन्यज्ञं तपोदानम् धर्मेकेयश्चान्ये कामं सत्यं दमं शमं अन्ये वदन्ति सार्थं वा ऐश्वर्यं त्यागभोजनम् नेचिन्यज्ञं तपोदानम् दतानि नियमान्यमा।
Yeah.
Dharmam, pious activities. Eke, some people. Yasha, fame. Cha, also. Anye, others. Kamam, sense gratification. Satyam, truthfulness. Dhammam, self-control. Shamam, peacefulness. Anye, others. Vadanti, propound. Svartham, pursuing one's self-interest. Vai, certainly. Aishwaryam, opulence or political influence. Tyaga, renunciation. Bhojanam, consumption. Kechit, some people. Yagyam, sacrifice. Tapa, austerity. Danam, charity. Vratani, taking vows. Niyaman, regular religious duties. Yaman, strict regulative discipline. Translation and purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Some say that people will be happy by performing pious religious activities. Others say that happiness is attained through fame, sense gratification, truthfulness, self-control, peace, self-interest, political influence, opulence, renunciation, consumption, sacrifice, penance, charity, vows, regulated duties, or strict disciplinary regulation. Each process has its proponents. Purport. Dharmam Eke refers to those atheistic philosophers called Karma Mimamsakas, who state that one should not waste time worrying about a kingdom of God that no one has ever seen and from which no one has ever returned. Rather, one should expertly utilize the laws of karma, performing fruitive activities in such a way that one will always be well situated. Concerning fame, it is said that as long as the fame of a human being is sung in the pious planets, he may live for thousands of years in material heaven. Kamam refers to Vedic texts like the Kama Sutra, as well as millions of modern books that advise one about sex pleasure. Some people state that the highest virtue in life is honesty. Others say it is self-control. peace of mind, and so on. Each viewpoint has proponents and scriptures. Others say that law, order, and morality are the highest good, whereas still others propose political influence as the real self-interest of human beings. Some state that one should give away one's material possessions to the needy. Others state that one should try to enjoy this life as far as possible. And others recommend daily rituals, disciplinary vows, penances, and so on. Translation: some say that people will be happy by performing pious religious activities. Others say that happiness is attained through fame, sense gratification, truthfulness, self-control, peace, self-interest, political influence, opulence, renunciation, consumption, sacrifice, penance, charity, vows, regulated duties, or strict disciplinary regulation. Each process has its proponents. Om Gyana Tirandasa Gyananjana Shnakya Chakshura Minatam Vena Tasmai Shri Guru Namaha. So, at the beginning of this chapter, Uddhava asks Krishna a question. Krishna taught Uddhava many things in the Uddhava Gita so far. There's a lot more that he'll talk about. But at this point, Uddhava asks Krishna, what is the best process? What is the best process? And almost like an apology, Krishna says, I'm sorry that you even have to ask this question. In the beginning of time, I taught this Vedic literature to Brahma. And it was clear as day. There was no ambiguity. But then over time, generation after generation after generation, people exploited the Vedic literature for their own personal self-interest. And so many opinions and paths and philosophies came from that. Now, Vedic philosophy can be explained in three different ways. One is called Sambandha. Does anyone know what sambandha means? Good. Relationship. So, relationship between what and what? Anyone? Good. The second way that philosophy is described is, who knows? Any of the kids? No? Avideya. Avideya is the relation, is the activities one performs in that relationship. And prayojana is the goal of that relationship. So the analogy is given that sambandha is like a map. And you know how you go into the mall? Who here's been to a mall? So when you go to the mall, they have this map, right? Usually, it's different places. And how do you know where you are on that map? Who knows? Dharma. I'm sorry, Radish. Sorry. Yeah. There's a little mark that says, you are here. Good. And so if you're trying to get to like the barbershop, right, that would be like your destination, your prayojana, right? So the path from you are here to the barbershop is abhideya. Those are the activities that take you from the starting point to your destination. Does that make sense? Who here doesn't understand? Good. So, thus far, Krishna taught Uddhava many different things. He first talked about the futility of fruitive activity. Who knows what fruitive activity is? Any of the kids? Fruitive activity, Goranga. That's an excellent answer. Really good answer. Fruitive activity is like a business transaction. I do something and I get something in return. So I work really hard, I get money. Right? I go to a store, I give them money, and I get a toy. Right? So it's a business transaction. So this is the law of karma. Karma is action and reaction. So that's fruitive activity. So does Krishna like fruitive activity? No. Why doesn't Krishna like fruitive activity? Gopal. Huh? I was asking Gopal. Why doesn't he like fruitive activity for us? Why doesn't he like fruitive activity? Why doesn't he like us doing it? Yeah, that's the right answer. The answer I was thinking about is that what you get in return, it's fleeting. Like you eat something and it's gone. You have a toy and then it breaks and you forget about it. You get bored with it, right? So it's very fleeting. It doesn't last very long. It doesn't give you any real satisfaction. So Krishna talks about the futility of fruitive activity. He also talks about Sankhya Yoga. Who do the kids know what Sankhya Yoga is? This is a hard question. You get a Mangal sweet from Shamadarshini Mataji. I think she allows. Anyone? So Sankhya Yoga is the path of, in Sanskrit it's called Pratyaksha and Anuman. Pratyaksha means observation. You observe something and then you make an inference about what you observe. So in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna, through the teachings of the Avadhut Brahman, he sees that this pigeon is attached to his family and it leads to his demise. Or the deer is attracted to beautiful sound and it leads to the deer's demise. So Sankhya Yoga is saying, well, I can observe that this attachment leads to not good results. The goal of Sankhya Yoga, okay? Everyone paying attention? Okay. You guys get enough sleep? Okay. The goal of Sankhya Yoga is to discriminate between illusion and reality. Like, what is the truth? What is permanent? And Krishna also talks about Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is detaching oneself from the temporary. Withdrawing the mind from the senses. Like that. And then finally, Krishna talks about bhakti. He says that bhakti is the highest in the association of devotees. And the association of devotees is the highest form of bhakti, or highest form of yoga. So, Uddhava and Krishna. Krishna essentially says that any goal that's temporary, or all of these things I just talked about, is useless. It's trivial. It's not important. It's the cause of bewilderment and suffering, lamentation. He just throws out all of these things, and then he says, the highest is bhakti. And in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it's also stated that way. Dharma prajita kaitavatra paramo, that it's cheating. If you aspire for a goal other than bhakti, it's like cheating. You're cheating yourself. So, why is bhakti eternal? Why is basically Krishna says that everything is temporary, except for love of God. The love of God is eternal. Why is love of God eternal? Does anyone know? Love of God is eternal because, and bhakti is eternal, because that's the only thing that Krishna wants. He only wants love. The nature of the spiritual world is bhakti. All of the associates, all of the pastimes, the form, the qualities of Krishna, the essence of it is pleasure, it's rasa, it's bhakti. So Krishna only wants bhakti. So if Krishna only wants bhakti, why are all of these different paths and all of these different goals? It's because of us. Each of us have unlimited desires, and there are unlimited people like us that have unlimited desires. So why does Krishna let us have all of these desires if Krishna only wants love? Why does he let us have all of these desires? Does anyone know? Yes. Oh my God. Genius. Beautiful answer. We have free will. Krishna does not interfere with our desires. We can desire anything and everything that we want, and Krishna will never interfere with our desires. So let us want whatever we want. But not only that, Krishna will reciprocate with each and every one of our desires. Now if you think about it, if you want something to eat, or you want a toy or something, what does that have to do with Krishna? As it's totally irrelevant to Krishna. He doesn't want it, but yet he reciprocates and gives you what we want. Because the nature of love is that you want those that you love to be happy. And if what we want is material things and temporary pleasures, then Krishna will give us that. Because he wants us to be happy, ultimately. And to the extent to which he reciprocates with us is, I mean, mind-boggling, if you think about it, right? He creates this whole unit. First of all, he creates the false ego. You know, we want to enjoy something that the Atma can't enjoy, because the Atma is eternal, right? So Krishna creates a false ego, a false self. And then he creates a mind, and he creates intelligence, and creates this world. He creates 8,400,000 species of life. He creates the atmosphere. He creates desires. He creates the senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose. He creates all of the sense objects. He creates time. It's like, has anyone seen that movie? What's the movie called? The Truman Show? That's kind of like an old movie. Has anyone seen that? It's like this alternate, Krishna creates this whole sophisticated alternate reality just so we can enjoy our pleasure because we don't want to love Krishna. And on top of that, if we ever decide to in the future, we say, okay, I've had enough of this. Okay, Krishna, I want to love you. And you start loving Krishna. Krishna, by his own will, becomes controlled by our love. He says that you are actually in my heart. That's pretty amazing, right? Krishna gets controlled by one of us, and we're so small. And he actually gets controlled by our love. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? So a lesson to learn here is that Krishna is controlled by our love, and he's Brahma praise in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna, that you are the supreme controller, and yet he's controlled by our love. And what to speak of us? That we can't control Krishna's love. So what's the lesson that we can learn from this? Lesson is that whatever happens to us in our life, we should know that Krishna loves us. So we might have reversals, we might have setbacks, we might fail an exam, or we might get in an argument, something might happen to us. But if we see, what is the higher purpose, and that this has happened to me, then we can actually, you're actually getting an opportunity to come closer to Krishna, to actually be nourished by Krishna's love, and to be closer to going back to home, back to Godhead. So today is the disappearance of Gaurakishore Das Babaji. It's also Ekadashi, and it's also the first day of Bhishma Panchaka. Does anyone know why it's called Bhishma Panchaka? Anyone know? Hardesh? Yeah. And why, do you know why it's called Bhishma Panchaka? Yeah. Good. So do you know why the name Bhishma is in there? Oh, I didn't hear that part. Oh. Sorry, you were speaking so softly. Actually, I don't know if that was the last 5 days Bhishma was on the planet. Is that true? But Bhishma fasted for these 5 days in preparation to leave his body. And out of love for Krishna's devotee, Bhishma, he named these 5 days Bhishma Panchaka. And that if we remember Bhishma Dev on these 5 days, we get the benefit of doing the full 4 months of Chaturmasya. And also the full Vrat of Damodar Vrat. So it's a very auspicious day. And the goal, the recommendation is that during these 5 days, or it's actually 4 days, right? Because of the lunar, it's a solar calendar, ends on Friday. So these 4 days, we intensify our hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. It's also Ekadashi, and the story that's related to this Ekadashi, Uttana Ekadashi, is there was a mouse that used to like to eat ghee. This is many millions of years ago. He used to like to eat ghee. After the ghee lamp was offered, whatever ghee was left there, he used to like to eat this ghee. So one time, this mouse, he started eating the ghee, but the ghee lamp wasn't completely extinguished. So the ghee wick got stuck between his teeth. And he started jumping up and down in front of the deities with his giwig in between his teeth. And unfortunately, fire burned him to death. But because he had a giwig in his mouth and he was dancing up and down in front of the deities, Krishna, he accepted that offering as the mouse doing arti to the deity. And he liberated that mouse. That mouse went to Vaikuntha. That's pretty amazing. Right? So, for our purification, I'll try my best to speak a little bit about Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Today is his disappearance day. Who knows who Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj is? Oh, someone else. Someone else.
Kalyani.
She already answered a question. Anyone else? All right. Kalyani. That's right. He is the spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And who's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? Raise your hand if you know. Everyone should be raising their hands. Who doesn't know? So, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji was the spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is the spiritual master of our Srila Prabhupada. He spent 30 years in Vrindavan, and he moved to Navadvip because he wanted to take darshan of Gaura Vishnupriya. There's a newly installed deities there. And Gaura Kishore Das Babaji was known as Sakshan Vairagya Murti. Is that right? Sakshan Vairagya Murti. That means he is the personification of austerity and penance and self-abnegation. He was so uninterested in maintaining his body that he rarely did anything to take care of his body. It said that he would eat uncooked rice. Has anyone ever tried eating uncooked rice successfully? He also ate raw earth. Has anyone tried eating dirt after they were 3 or 4 years old? He would, to clothe his body, you know what he would do? He would find corpses in the Ganga, and he would take the clothes off of the corpses and wash those clothes and wear those clothes. For his place of residence, he lived under a wicker awning of a boat for a long time. And then he moved to, you wouldn't believe this, he moved into a latrine. Does everyone know what a latrine is? It's where you go to the bathroom. So he used to live in a latrine. Now, he wasn't just doing this just to be bizarre. This was actually a really profound message he was trying to communicate. He found it more distasteful to enjoy material life than he did to live in a latrine. And when he was living under the awning, he would always get bothered by gossip and by annoying talks of people who were living there, that he didn't want to engage in gossip, talking about anything but Krishna. So he went to a latrine. And those individuals who liked the gossip, they didn't like latrines. So he stayed in the latrine. But that's a really important message, is that he was so attached to Krishna that he found living in a latrine more desirable than it was to enjoy the material world. That's how renounced he was. So now Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he built a house in Mayapur right? And after Bhaktivinoda Thakur built a house there, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, of course, was also there in Mayapur because he's a son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji came one day, and he was wearing a tiger cap, and he had a mala, and he had like a bag of puja paraphernalia. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur told his son Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to take further instruction from Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Now, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they were like two completely different types of people. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was highly literate. It said that one time he worked in a library, and he was so, his thirst for knowledge was so strong that he just read every single book in the library. Can you imagine? He read the entire library during a short period of time when he was staying there. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, on the other hand, was illiterate. It's saying that he couldn't even write his name. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very well dressed, you know, well groomed. Gaurakishore Das Babaji, we just described, wasn't. And at that time, there were so many gurus that wanted to give initiation to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but he was constantly refusing because he sensed an ulterior motive. They wanted him as a disciple to further, you know, their, you know, prestige as a teacher. But when he asked Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj for initiation, what do you think Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said? He said no, right? And he said no on a number of different occasions, actually. I wish I could tell you the rest of the story, but for those who can stay. Gantra Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. He asked for initiation, and Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he said, I gave initiation one time in my life, but he went away, so I'm not giving initiations anymore. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, he asked for initiation again. And he said that I have to ask Mahaprabhu. If he gives me the order, and then you know the story, I'll give you initiation. So he asked, Did you ask Mahaprabhu? He's like, oh, I forgot to ask. I forgot to ask Mahaprabhu. So he came back again and he said, did you ask? He's like, I asked, but Mahaprabhu didn't answer. And then he came back again and he said, I asked and he didn't give me the order to initiate you. And that, it was at that point Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was weeping, he was crying, and he said that life after life, I will just wait for that mercy that I'm begging for. I'll wait forever if I have to. And eventually, Gaurakishore Das Babaji relented, and he gave him initiation. And after initiation, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't have that much association with Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Occasionally he would go across the Ganga and he would take darshan of his spiritual master. Sometimes he would go visit his spiritual master and bring fresh fruits and vegetables. But very little association that they had together. One time, devotees would always try to take the dust from Gaura Kishore Das Babaji's feet. He would never let anybody take the dust. But one time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came. Without him even asking, he put his feet on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's head. He took both of his feet and put it on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's head. And he gave him the instruction that always preach the absolute truth and stay away from any other activity. Just preach the absolute truth. And there was one time, somebody from Calcutta came on a yatra with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he said, "Your spiritual master and you are so different. Gaura Kishore Das Babaji is a Bhajanandi, and you're, you know, preaching and, you know, using the printing press and all of these things. How is it that, you know, you got initiated by Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj?" And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave the analogy. He said, just like a boat. You know, you have the boat, and you have the engine, and you have all these moving parts. And those, of course, back in those days, you know, they ran by a battery. But there was one little battery, and that battery, it, you know, moved the boat. Of course, probably not very fast, since it was a battery. But my spiritual master is like that battery, that he is the source of inspiration for all of my activities. And that's how I'm able to do anything in this world. It's my spiritual master. It said that Gaura Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj gave three specific instructions after that initial initiation. One was, don't make any disciples. Two was, don't associate with non-devotees. And the third was, don't go to Calcutta, which is the abode of Kali Yuga, in Gaura Kishore Das Babaji's estimation. So when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura was questioned, that, you know, he had, I think, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura had 60,000 disciples. That was the number I read. 60,000 disciples. So he had so many disciples, yet his guru said, don't make any disciples. And he was constantly associating with non-devotees because he was a preacher. And his Sri Chaitanya Math was in Calcutta. So how do you reconcile the instructions he received with what he did? So his explanation was, I consider all my disciples to be my spiritual masters because I am their servant. And I never considered them. Those that consider me their spiritual master, I consider myself their servant. And because he doesn't receive anything when he's preaching, he's only giving, he's only associating with the spiritual master, because everything that he received was from the spiritual master. Therefore, he never associated with any non-devotees. And for the third instruction, he was in Calcutta, but he wasn't in Calcutta because he was staying at the Chaitanya Math, which is non-different from Goloka Vrindavan. And then he narrated the pastime of Ramanujacharya. The story of Ramanujacharya is very famous. He asked his spiritual master, Goshtipurna, right? His spiritual master. He asked Goshtipurna 18 times for the mantra for achieving prema bhakti. And he didn't give him the mantra. And finally, he relented on the 18th time. He gave him the mantra, but he said, only on one condition I'll give you this mantra. If you don't tell anybody that has material desires, you know, who's impure, don't share this mantra with anybody. So he agreed. Amanujacharya agreed. And then Kaushtipurna said, the mantra is, Om Namo Narayanaya. He folded his hands, he paid his obeisances with utmost gratitude. And immediately after that, he went to a public marketplace. And he said, if you chant this mantra, anybody who chants this mantra will be immediately liberated and go to Vaikuntha directly. So he was shouting at the top of his lungs. Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. And Kaushtipurna, he couldn't believe what he was hearing. He just couldn't believe it. And he said, because of this offense, you're going to go to hell. And Ramanujacharya, he smiled. He said, if all of those individuals who chanted that mantra goes to Vaikuntha, it's my greatest happiness to go to hell. And Kaushtipurna was so pleased when he heard that answer that he said that you are actually fit to be my guru. So the purport is that a real devotee, his main interest is the happiness of Krishna and his devotees. That's his only consideration. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji left this world, I believe, on November 16th, 1914. And when he left, there was a lot of the Dambasis wanted to make their samadhi on their particular property, because they thought that it would bring more tourists, more business. And the police actually had to get involved. But it was decided that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would have the service of making the samadhi for his spiritual master. A samadhi was made on the bank of Ganga, in Kulia. But then later his samadhi was moved to the Chaitanya Math in Radhakund by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's desire. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Mataji had her hand up. How is it that Bhishma Panchaka comes before Gita Jayanti? So Gita is the Gita Jayanti was when the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. It could have been it could be future years,
but
right?
No. He died in Afghanistan on a bed of arrows, right?
He didn't die immediately. He stayed on the bed of arrows. He was waiting for the Makara Sankranti, which is the first day of Uttarayana. So he didn't die immediately after the Battle of Kurukshetra.
Wasn't the battle like 18 days? I mean, that was like another month that he was laying there, isn't it?
The battle lasted 18 and plus, 18 and quarter, 18 and half, something like that. Because the five sons of the Pandavas.
They deserve one.
That's the after 18 days, so 18 plus.
Right.
And mismo del 10th day, he fell from his position. Not fell, but sat down on the seat. And then he lay down there on the arrows until the January, when the Uttarayan comes. He departed from there. This is a preparation. No way to say it is that.
I still don't understand how this 5 days comes before the Gita was even spoken about when the Chaitra happened.
What do you mean, according to the calendar?
Yeah. This Bhishma Panchika is coming before the Gita Jayanti even happened. I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm not sure what the answer is to that question.
You have that.
Thank you, Mataji. Brilliant question. Any other comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada ki, yeah. Recommended.